Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we have exclusive recordings from our interview with La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis and La Mesa's Police Chief Walt Vasquez on the city's pre-protest preparations and responses to the rioting that rocked the city on May 30th and 31st when several buildings burned to the ground. We'll also have updates on some of the steps the city has taken to help address the concerns raised by protesters in an effort to help heal racial relations in La Mesa. On Crime Beat, learn about an arrest made of a man caught with Molotov cocktails and other explosive devices during the La Mesa riot. And then on Green Scene, we'll have some good news for outdoor enthusiasts. And Zabrego Desert State Park, the largest park in the California State Park system, is about to get even bigger. Find out why on today's show. We'll also have the latest on COVID-19, including many major entertainment venues starting to reopen immediately, and why county health officials are urging the public to continue following the rules regarding social distancing to avoid a spike in cases. Plus, on People Power, hear about some new grants being offered through the San Diego Foundation for groups seeking to benefit the community of Ramona. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. On Tuesday, June 9th, I sat down, along with contributing editor Paul Cruz, and held exclusive interviews with La Mesa's Mayor Mark Arapostathis and Police Chief Walt Vasquez. We talked about the city's preparations for the big protests and responses to the rioting, looting, and fires that rocked the city the night of May 30th and the early morning of May 31st. We also asked what steps the city and police plan to take to address concerns about police violence, including a protester shot in the head with a beanbag, as well as racial profiling concerns raised by a controversial stop by a white La Mesa police officer near a trolley station. That sparked the massive protest, along with outrage over the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis by a white police officer there, who has since been charged with murder. I first asked Mayor Arapostathis how concerned he was when he learned that there would be protests in the city, given that there had been violence after some protests elsewhere in the nation, including the burning down of a police station in Minneapolis.
Always concerned about the city of La Mesa, but I watched the protest. I live close by. I was watching it. It was peaceful, so I wasn't concerned until after I started seeing people throwing objects and a different kind of group dynamic seemed to start occurring, and that's when I became concerned. And like everyone else on the council, I was watching what was going on, you know, and when the advisory came out to avoid the area, when fires started, I was devastated that it was starting to devolve into something like that.
We then asked about the timeline of events, with the first violence that began with rock throwing reported at 4 o'clock, and later devolving into rioting, looting, and finally the burning down of the banks shortly before midnight. We asked the mayor about his communications with the police chief and what outreach he had made to seek help from other agencies during that long night.
I was in a direct communication with the police because I don't know how well you know how the city council works, but we don't make command decisions. We don't order the police. We can't give them suggestions. They're an independent agency.
Okay.
So I was in touch with...
I thought they might have just been keeping informed a little bit about...
Through the city manager was our contact, and always is, and that's the way the city manager form of government works, and it's throughout the county many are like that. But anyways, the city manager was keeping us informed of what was going on, and at one point when we had been told that we had every agency that we had requested and no more were coming, I got in touch with Assemblywoman Akilah Weber, Shirley Weber, reached out to me and asked what could be done. And I asked that we need help. The mayor of La Mesa doesn't have the authority or the power to ask for the National Guard or any other agencies. But
is that the governor that would have to do that? Or
it would have to come through the governor, and I'll let the chief mostly ask them, because those are tactical questions.
Were you able to reach the governor during the night, or was she?
I don't know if she was. You'd have to ask her, but no, I was not able to contact the governor.
Okay.
But as far as mutual aid, that all comes from the sheriff and between the sheriff and the police department.
Next, I asked the mayor about efforts to keep the public informed about the events unfolding that night.
There was a Nixle alert warning people to stay off of the freeway that I saw when things started going bad there. At 1:30 in the morning, you all got together, the council, and announced a curfew. You did notify media. I'm assuming that probably went out by Nixle. In between there, a lot of people have asked me, why were there no, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there were other alerts going out to the public or the press when we had, you know, major buildings on fire and obviously a very real dangerous situation. But what was the reason for that?
I don't know. I don't send out Nixle reports. I was watching with the rest of the city.
Okay. Was there any effort to try to have a presence, to go on media, to talk, or were you leaving that basically up to the police at that point?
Yes.
Next, I asked the mayor whether it might have been possible to de-escalate the tensions early on during the protest.
Was there any discussion early on of whether to address, have someone from the city, perhaps yourself or someone, at the morning protest when things were still peaceful, to try to address them as has been done in some places or make people feel that they were being heard? Do you think that could have helped in hindsight?
I have no idea. I'm going to have to tap out, so thank you very much.
Do you have any message that you'd like to say to the citizens?
I'm sorry that all of this happened. Sorry for what happened at the trolley station. And that I'm listening to every voice. And that the city council last year formed a citizens oversight task force.
Ask about that.
They're meeting next week. And we're taking all recommendations and nothing's off the table.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mayor.
And next, here is our complete interview with La Mesa Police Chief Walt Vasquez. We were able to adjust the microphone and get a little bit better quality sound, so we're going to run this in its entirety.
Next, we're going to speak with Chief Walt Vasquez. Chief, I can't even imagine how this must have been. After reading that timeline, it's obvious that you were under tremendous stress. There was a lot of violence and threats going on very early. How concerned were you early on about the safety of your officers, given what we'd seen happen with the police station burned down in Minneapolis? Peace rallies that began peacefully, and at some point during the night, you know, things turned bad. What precautions had you taken early on to protect your officers and to protect the city?
Thank you. And that truly was our concern, is the safety of the city and the safety of the officers and all of the staff. So early on, we reached out to our partners, the San Diego Sheriff's Department. They are the mutual aid coordinators for our county. I believe San Diego is the second largest county in California, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So they're the mutual aid coordinators, and before the event started, in fact, if I recall, 2 days before the event started, we started reaching out with the planning process because we saw so many cities just experience some very violent protests that resulted, as you mentioned earlier, in police stations being burnt down. And so we started planning 2 days before and checking on and requesting resources to assist us just in case it reached a point where it turned into a riot.
The woman that was struck in the head, you've indicated that she was throwing a rock, or at least your timeline indicated she was throwing a rock. Do you have independent video surveillance video that confirms that? And do you know, was the officer aiming for her head, or was he aiming elsewhere, and you know, in the chaos, that's what happened?
During the review that's going on right now, we're reviewing all video, both from the exterior of the police department and also the video cameras on the officers, the body-worn cameras, and we're still reviewing. We started that investigation and review that morning, Sunday morning. Yes, I mean, we, again, continue to review that information. The officer, as per our training, the target area when we use less lethal munitions, is actually the lower torso or stomach area. That's the primary target area. It is not the head.
Right. Yeah, we had a photographer who was hit in the chest also with pepper spray, who was ID'd as me.
So to what degree does sometimes when you are in an emergency situation that sometimes a firearm will just go off? And also, what precautions does a law enforcement officer have to have that not happen?
Yeah, exactly. And that comes down to the training that is constantly instilled in the officers, whether it be the initial training or subsequent trainings. In that case, as mentioned, the officers are very skilled in regards to or trained in that manner, where once they see the threat, when the object was thrown at the deputies and officers, at that point, then they had to fire the less lethal at the individual.
Okay. I would like to talk about the fires, which I think was the most serious concern of the night. There was certainly a real risk that we could have lost more than the three buildings that burned with spot fires all over and everything. But a lot of people are asking, we know it was dangerous, but why weren't there more outside fire agencies coming in, maybe some kind of aerial support to douse these fires? There were still embers that flared up. I was watching at 4 a.m. that came very close to trees. Why did that happen? What could be better done in the future, to God forbid something like this ever happens again? Was CAL FIRE contacted? Can you tell me what was going on?
Those are great questions. The after-action report and the thorough review and analysis of what occurred will happen. And from that report, obviously we will partner with our public safety partners, the fire department. And then we'll have lessons learned, and we will continue to analyze that information to see how exactly we can improve and change our tactics. Unfortunately, in that circumstance with the fires, still at that point with the resources that we had and still with the attacks that were occurring and the violent acts and the violence throughout the city, we could not safely get the fire department to those locations.
Yeah, I understand. A fire truck and a battalion chief vehicle both had burned already.
That's correct. We did have one of the battalion chief's vehicles burned.
But not a fire truck? There was a report of it in the radio.
It was one of the fire pickups, one of their vehicles.
Okay, not an engine.
From the chief.
There were also rumors on social media. Were there any threats or, for that matter, findings of things like bombs or booby trapping of these buildings that might have prevented firefighters from going into it?
I'm not aware of those being found.
Okay.
Because we are dealing here with banks. So is the Secret Service and FBI also investigating on what happened at the banks?
I think at the federal level, yes, since it was banks that were burned, destroyed. It would go to a federal level in regards to also looking at those arson instances.
Yeah, I know the FBI has asked for tips from the public, too.
Yes, sir.
How many arrests, if any, were made the night of the protest and early the next, up through early the next morning in La Mesa?
At this point, we have the night of the occurrence and in the morning, we made 7 arrests.
Okay.
And then since that incident, we've made 2 additional arrests due to the help and tips and information from the public.
That's good to know. Sometimes when there's large protests that I've seen in other places, they would preposition, buses so that if they needed to do mass arrests of protesters who were wanting to do civil disobedience, they could do that and kind of get them out of there. Was there any thought ahead of time to doing that, or if this were to happen again, do you think something like that might be something to look at, recognizing that I know it's difficult when you're having rocks thrown at you? But
right. No, I understand. And actually at the staging area or command post, that was set up with that vehicle if we entered into a situation where we had to make mass arrests. So that was already in place.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked, why weren't there some arrests made after they announced we're going to arrest people if you don't leave, and then instead it was, the pepper spraying or the tear gas or whatever.
Right, yeah. After, at that point, we just didn't have the resources due to the fact that the officers that were on scene around the police station immediately, again, as we mentioned even before the unlawful assembly announcements, the notice to disperse, they are already taking rocks and bottles and They were just under siege at that point from multiple locations, from multiple individuals. Eventually, we did have at least two Molotov cocktails thrown at the station to try to set it on fire.
Wow. Now, one of the questions I'd like to ask...
This is the last question, yes.
Oh, it's of importance.
Okay.
Well, I definitely do want to ask about the Amaree Johnson situation. And I know that they've decided not to file charges against the young man.
Yes, ma'am.
What further is the police department going to do to try to sort of heal the relations, the racial relations in the community, not only with the Amaree Johnson situation and seeing if accountability, making sure the officer is held accountable if it's found that he, you know, did not behave appropriately, but beyond that, to try to, you know, reach out and see what can be done to heal this anger by some in the community of what they perceive as racial injustice in police departments across the country, and specifically a couple of incidents that have occurred in La Mesa.
That is definitely part of the healing process, without a doubt in my mind. The outreach has already started. I've had organizations reaching out to me. The chiefs and sheriffs are already talking about improvement and changes and connections and partnerships and working together. As we progress through this, and move forward and start that healing, those types of outreach and those changes will occur, without a doubt.
I want to ask my one question about the situation at the Vons. What was the timeline from the time that you learned about the situation at the Vons? Did you start to respond to the, when did they contact you?
When the situation at Vons started to occur, that's when the incident commanders and those working for the safety of the citizens started to request more resources and trying to figure out exactly how to get them into the scene. When the resources did arrive, at certain points, they could not get into the Vons due to either a burning vehicle, or at certain points when the police vehicles would come down the road, they would be hit by a barrage of rocks and bottles, and so they would have to detour around it. So it took us some time to get into that area.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Who do we follow up on to ask about what happened after your timeline ends, after 3:33?
Runge will be your contact.
Absolutely. Lieutenant Runge.
Okay.
We'll definitely answer the questions.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now, this week, the City of La Mesa has made several important announcements. The La Mesa City Council on Tuesday night voted unanimously to fund an independent investigation of the actions of the city's police, firefighters, and other agencies to the protests and riots. Several arrests have been made of alleged looters, rioters, and a man found with explosive Molotov cocktails and fireworks during that tumultuous night. Charges have been dropped against Amaree Johnson, the young black man in the trolley stop incident, though an investigation into the officer's conduct continues. The city has also announced a settlement in a lawsuit filed by a Helix High School student shown in a viral video being pushed to the ground by a La Mesa police officer back in 2018. La Mesa police have announced it has banned the use of the controversial carotid chokehold, and the city is moving forward on its plans for a police oversight commission slated to meet next week.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Brianna Gomez with a Crime Beat report. Federal charges have been filed against a man accused of possessing explosive devices during riots in La Mesa that began the night of May 30th. The U.S. Attorney's Office has charged 28-year-old Zachary Karras of San Diego with possessing incendiary devices, including Molotov cocktails and fireworks. On the night of May 30th and early hours of May 31st, multiple buildings and vehicles were set afire during a night of terror in La Mesa, following peaceful protests against police violence earlier in the day. According to the complaint, Karras and his girlfriend, Callie Junkett, were sitting on the pavement at the corner of Allison Avenue and Spring Street by the trolley tracks. Officers ordered the crowd to disperse for an unlawful assembly and arrested Karras after he failed to leave. Officers then found that Karras possessed Molotov cocktails, two glass bottles with wicks that contained gasoline. Molotov cocktails are known as bottle bombs or poor man's grenades. Karras also had fireworks in his possession. A federal agent with the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, or ATF, inspected the Molotov cocktails and found them to be functioning incendiary devices. A timeline released by the La Mesa Police Department indicates Molotov cocktails were thrown at the La Mesa Police Station during the protest there earlier in the evening. That night, several vehicles were burned, including a Heartland Fire Battalion chief's vehicle and a Vons truck. Spot fires were ignited in City Hall and other buildings. Chase Bank, Union Bank, and the historic Randall Lamb Building burned down. Karras' girlfriend posted a GoFundMe page for his legal defense, claiming he was there as a peaceful protester. On his Facebook page, Karras claimed that despite being caught with flammable devices, he was, quote, in no way part of the burning of any structures and was not involved in any looting. If convicted, Karras could face up to 10 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. U.S. Attorney Robert Brewer in San Diego states, quote, the Constitution strongly protects the First Amendment right of all to speak out and peacefully protest. My office is committed to protecting that First Amendment right. But, he adds, violence, however, by a relatively small number of opportunists who sought to wreak havoc, destroy property, and threaten the safety of peaceful protesters will not be tolerated.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
California's largest state park is about to get even bigger. The Anza Borrego Foundation, or ABF, announced that it has closed escrow on several properties it plans to donate to the state and expand Anza Borrego Desert State Park. The land transfer will include 331 parcels, totaling 17,598 acres over 25 years of land acquisitions. A newsletter sent by the ABF to its members states, in response to COVID-19, there has been increased land activity. Landowners have called eager to sell, and a couple even wanted to donate their land to ABF. Grant writing and land acquisition have continued, even while the park has been closed off to the public due to the pandemic. One of the newly acquired is a 10-acre parcel of donated land overlooking Texas Dip and San Felipe Wash, surrounded on all four sides by ABF and State Park property. In addition, on April 1st, ABF closed escrow on two inholdings, that is, land surrounded by the state park, with grants from the Resources Fund. The transfer to the California State Park Service is expected to be finalized soon. The ABF statement concludes, even in the face of COVID-19, we are hopeful for the close of sale in the next few months to be able to leverage land transfer funds for future acquisitions. You can learn more, donate funds or land to the Anza Borrego Foundation at theabf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
The latest easing of COVID-19 restrictions are rolling out. Starting June 12th, indoor movie theaters can reopen and film production of TVs and movies can resume. Also allowed to reopen with limitations are gyms, bars, and wineries, swimming pools, hotels and other rental properties for travelers, and major tourist attractions such as zoos, aquariums, galleries, and museums. In addition, racetracks and card rooms can reopen, and professional sporting events can be held, but without spectators for now. Masks and social distancing will be required when not eating or drinking at these facilities. Steps for business owners to follow and guidance are available at the county's Safe Reopening page. Despite these steps to return life closer to normal, however, County Health Officer Wilma Wooten warns several communities across the nation have seen a spike in case numbers after reopening their economies. We need to remain vigilant and continue to use the measures that have slowed the spread of COVID-19, she says. Now, a few businesses are required to remain closed due to the pandemic, including convention centers, concert venues, nail salons, therapeutic massage businesses, and tattoo parlors. About 3% of people tested countywide are testing positive for the virus, and that's been consistent over the last several weeks. As of Thursday, 110 new cases and 5 more deaths were reported. Currently, there are 56 active outbreaks, although all but 12 of those are in skilled nursing homes or other congregate living facilities. La Mesa, where thousands of protesters and rioters had raised concerns over a possible spike in coronavirus cases, the city has had only a small rise since those events, with 23 new cases since May 30th. You can learn more at the county's COVID-19 page by visiting coronavirus-sd.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Jonathan Goetz with a People Power Report. The Ramona Community Foundation, or RCF, has announced its annual call for grant applications. In its ninth year of grant making, RCF invites nonprofit organizations and agencies to submit proposals that demonstrate the power to build a more vibrant Ramona community. The goal of the grant cycle is to support programs that make Ramona a great place to live, work, and play, they say. Desirable projects will inspire community pride and revitalization and increase the quality of life of the broader community. To achieve the greatest impact, RCF will fund programs that involve collaborative efforts, bringing together a variety of stakeholders. Eligible nonprofit organizations serving Ramona may submit proposals of $1,500 to $5,000. Projects should be practical, achievable within a 12-month time frame, and have prospects for long-term sustainability. Grant guidelines are available at sdfoundation.org. The deadline for application submission is Monday, July 13th at 5 p.m. For more information about the application, contact Carrie@sdfoundation.org, and that's Carrie spelled K-E-R-R-I. The Ramona Community Foundation was established by the San Diego Foundation as part of a regional network of affiliate foundations. According to their section on sdfoundation.org, RCF leverages local leadership, builds endowments, increases impactful philanthropy, and promotes civic engagement. The San Diego Foundation and its donors have granted more than $1.2 billion to support nonprofit organizations and strengthen our San Diego community over the past 45 years. Learn more about the Ramona Community Foundation and or the San Diego Foundation at sdfoundation.org.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Goetz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we have exclusive recordings from our interview with La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis and La Mesa's Police Chief Walt Vasquez on the city's pre-protest preparations and responses to the rioting that rocked the city on May 30th and 31st when several buildings burned to the ground. We'll also have updates on some of the steps the city has taken to help address the concerns raised by protesters in an effort to help heal racial relations in La Mesa. On Crime Beat, learn about an arrest made of a man caught with Molotov cocktails and other explosive devices during the La Mesa riot. And then on Green Scene, we'll have some good news for outdoor enthusiasts. And Borrego Desert State Park, the largest park in the California State Park system, is about to get even bigger. Find out why on today's show. We'll also have the latest on COVID-19, including many major entertainment venues starting to reopen immediately, and why county health officials are urging the public to continue following the rules regarding social distancing to avoid a spike in cases. Plus, on People Power, hear about some new grants being offered through the San Diego Foundation for groups seeking to benefit the community of Ramona. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. On Tuesday, June 9th, I sat down, along with contributing editor Paul Cruz, and held exclusive interviews with La Mesa's Mayor Mark Arapostathis and Police Chief Walt Vasquez. We talked about the city's preparations for the big protests and responses to the rioting, looting, and fires that rocked the city the night of May 30th and the early morning of May 31st. We also asked what steps the city and police plan to take to address concerns about police violence, including a protester shot in the head with a beanbag, as well as racial profiling concerns raised by a controversial stop by a white La Mesa police officer near a trolley station. That sparked the massive protest, along with outrage over the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis by a white police officer there, who has since been charged with murder. I first asked Mayor Arapostathis how concerned he was when he learned that there would be protests in the city, given that there had been violence after some protests elsewhere in the nation, including the burning down of a police station in Minneapolis.
Always concerned about the city of La Mesa, but I watched the protest. I live close by. I was watching it. It was peaceful, so I wasn't concerned until after I started seeing people throwing objects and a different kind of group. Dynamics seemed to start occurring, and that's when I became concerned. And like everyone else on the council, I was watching what was going on, you know. And when the advisory came out to avoid the area, when fires started, I was devastated that it was starting to devolve into something like that.
We then asked about the timeline of events, with the first violence that began with rock throwing reported at 4 o'clock, and later devolving into rioting, looting, and finally the burning down of the banks shortly before midnight. We asked the mayor about his communications with the police chief and what outreach he had made to seek help from other agencies during that long night.
I was in a direct communication with the police because I don't know how you well you know how the city council works, but we don't make command decisions. We don't order the police. We can't give them suggestions. They're an independent agency.
Okay.
So I was in touch with...
I thought they might have just been keeping informed a little bit about...
Through the city manager was our contact, and it always is, and that's the way the city manager form of government works, and it's throughout the county many are like that. But anyways, the city manager was keeping us informed of what was going on, and at one point when we had been told that we had every agency that we had requested and no more were coming, I got in touch with Assemblywoman Akilah Weber, Shirley Weber, pardon me, reached out to me and asked what could be done. And I asked that we need help. The mayor of La Mesa doesn't have the authority or the power to ask for the National Guard or any other agencies. But
is that the governor that would have to do that? Or
it would have to come through the governor, and I'll let the chief mostly ask them, because those are tactical questions.
Were you able to reach the governor during the night, or was she?
I don't know if she was. You'd have to ask her, but no, I was not able to contact the governor.
Okay.
But as far as mutual aid, that all comes from the sheriff and between the sheriff and the police department.
Next, I asked the mayor about efforts to keep the public informed about the events unfolding that night.
There was a NXL alert warning people to stay off of the freeway that I saw when things started going bad there. At 1:30 in the morning, you all got together, the council, and announced a curfew. You did notify media. I'm assuming that probably went out by NXL. In between there, a lot of people have asked me, why were there no, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there were other alerts going out to the public or the press when we had, you know, major buildings on fire and obviously a very real dangerous situation. But what was the reason for that?
I don't know. I don't send out NXL reports. I was watching with the rest of the city.
Okay. Was there any effort to try to have a presence, to go on media, to talk, or were you leaving that basically up to the police at that point?
Yes.
Next, I asked the mayor whether it might have been possible to de-escalate the tensions early on during the protest.
Was there any discussion early on of whether to address, have someone from the city, perhaps yourself or someone, at the morning protest when things were still peaceful, to try to address them as has been done in some places or make people feel that they were being heard? Do you think that could have helped in hindsight?
I have no idea. I'm going to have to tap out, so thank you very much.
Do you have any message that you'd like to say to
the citizens? Sorry that all of this happened. Sorry for what happened at the trolley station. And that I'm listening to every voice. And that the city council last year formed a citizens oversight task force.
Ask about that.
They're meeting next week. And we're taking all recommendations and nothing's off the table.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mayor.
And next, here is our complete interview with La Mesa Police Chief Walt Vasquez. We were able to adjust the microphone and get a little bit better quality sound, so we're going to run this in its entirety.
Next, we're going to speak with Chief Walt Vasquez. Chief, I can't even imagine how this must have been. After reading that timeline, it's obvious that you were under tremendous stress. There was a lot of violence and threats going on very early. How concerned were you early on about the safety of your officers, given what we'd seen happen with a police station burned down in Minneapolis? Peace rallies that began peacefully, and at some point during the night, you know, things turned bad. What precautions had you taken early on to protect your officers and to protect the city?
Thank you. And that truly was our concern, is the safety of the city and the safety of the officers and all of the staff. So early on, we reached out to our partners, the San Diego Sheriff's Department. They are the mutual aid coordinators for our county. I believe San Diego is the second largest county in California, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So they're the mutual aid coordinators, and before the event started, in fact, if I recall, 2 days before the event started, we started reaching out with the planning process because we saw so many cities just experienced some very violent protests that resulted, as you mentioned earlier, in police stations being burnt down. And so we started planning 2 days before and checking on and requesting resources to assist us just in case it reached a point where it turned into a riot.
The woman that was struck in the head, you've indicated that she was throwing a rock, or at least your timeline indicated she was throwing a rock. Do you have independent video surveillance video that confirms that? And do you know, was the officer aiming for her head, or was he aiming elsewhere? And you know, in the chaos, that's what happened.
During the review that's going on right now, we're reviewing all video, both from the exterior of the police department and also the video cameras on the officers, the body-worn cameras, and we're still reviewing. We started that investigation and review that morning, Sunday morning. Yes, I mean, we, again, continue to review that information. The officer, as per our training, the target area, when we use less lethal munitions, is actually the lower torso or stomach area. That's the primary target area. It is not the head.
Right. Yeah, we had a photographer who was hit in the chest also with pepper spray who was okay. ID'd as
me. So to what degree does sometimes when you are in an emergency situation that sometimes a firearm will just go off? What and also what precautions does a law enforcement officer have to have that not happen?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that comes down to the training that is constantly instilled in the officers, whether it be the initial training or subsequent trainings. In that case, you know, as mentioned, the officers are very skilled in regards to or trained in that manner where once they see the threat, when the object was thrown at the deputies and officers, at that point, then they had to they had to fire the less lethal at the individual.
Okay. I would like to talk about the fires, which I think was the most serious concern of the night. There was certainly a real risk that we could have lost more than the three buildings that burned with spot fires all over and everything. But a lot of people are asking, we know it was dangerous, but why weren't there more outside fire agencies coming in, maybe some kind of aerial support to douse these fires? There were still embers that flared up. I was watching at 4 a.m. that came very close to trees. Why did that happen? What could be better done in the future, you know, to God forbid something like this ever happens again? You know, was CAL FIRE contacted? Can you tell me what was going on?
Those are great questions. The after action report and the thorough review and analysis of what occurred will happen. And from that report, obviously we will partner with our public safety partners, the fire department. And then we'll have lessons learned, and we will continue to analyze that information to see how exactly we can improve and change our tactics. Unfortunately, in that circumstance with the fires, still at that point with the resources that we had and still with the attacks that were occurring and the violent acts and the violence throughout the city, we could not safely get the fire department to those locations.
Yeah, I understand. A fire truck and a battalion chief vehicle both had burned already.
That's correct. We did have one of the battalion chief's vehicles burned.
But not a fire truck? There was a report of it in the radio.
It was one of the fire pickups, one of their vehicles.
Okay, not an engine.
From the chief.
There were also rumors on social media. Were there any threats or, for that matter, findings of things like bombs or booby trapping of these buildings that might have prevented firefighters from going into it?
I'm not aware of those being found.
Okay.
Because we are dealing here with banks. So is the Secret Service and FBI also investigating on what happened at the banks?
I think at the federal level, yes, since it was banks that were burned, destroyed. It would go to a federal level in regards to also looking at those arson instances.
Yeah, I know the FBI has asked for tips from the public, too.
Yes, sir.
How many arrests, if any, were made the night of the protest and early the next morning in La Mesa?
At this point, we have the night of the occurrence and in the morning, we made 7 arrests.
Okay.
And then since that incident, we've made 2 additional arrests due to the help and tips and information from the public.
That's good to know. Sometimes when there's large protests there that I've seen in other places, they would preposition, you know, buses so that if they needed to do mass arrests of protesters who were wanting to do civil disobedience, they could do that and kind of get them out of there. Was there any thought ahead of time to doing that, or if this were to happen again, do you think something like that might be something to look at, recognizing that I know it's difficult when you're having rocks thrown at you? But
right. No, I understand. And actually at the staging area or command post, that was set up with that vehicle if we entered into a situation where we had to make mass arrests. So that was already in place.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked, why weren't there some arrests made after they announced we're going to arrest people if you don't leave, and then instead it was, you know, the pepper spraying or the tear gas or whatever.
Right, yeah. After, at that point, we just didn't have the resources due to the fact that the officers that were on scene around the police station immediately, again, as we mentioned even before the unlawful assembly announcements, the notice to disperse, they were already taking rocks and bottles, and they were just under siege at that point from multiple locations, from multiple individuals. Eventually, we did have at least two Molotov cocktails thrown at the station to try to set it on fire.
Wow. Now, one of the questions I'd like to ask.
This is the last question, yes, sir.
Oh, it's got importance.
Okay.
Well, I definitely do want to ask about the Amaury Johnson situation. And I know that they've decided not to file charges against the young man.
Yes, ma'am.
What further is the police department going to do to try to sort of heal the relations, the racial relations in the community, not only with the Amaury Johnson situation and seeing if accountability, making sure the officer is held accountable if it's found that he, you know, did not behave appropriately, but beyond that, to try to, you know, reach out and see what can be done to heal this anger by some in the community of what they perceive as racial injustice in police departments across the country, and specifically a couple of incidents that have occurred in La Mesa.
That is definitely part of the healing process, without a doubt in my mind. The outreach has already started. I've had organizations reaching out to me. The chiefs and sheriffs are already talking about improvement and changes and connections and partnerships and working together. As we progress through this and move forward and start that healing, those types of outreach and those changes will occur, without a doubt.
I want to ask my one question about the situation at the Vons. What was the timeline from the time that you learned about the situation at the Vons? Did you start to respond to when did they contact you?
When the situation at Vons started to occur, that's when the incident commanders and those working for the safety of the citizens started to request more resources and trying to figure out exactly how to get them into the scene. When the resources did arrive, at certain points, they could not get into the Vons due to either a burning vehicle, or at certain points when the police vehicles would come down the road, they would be hit by a barrage of rocks and bottles, and so they would have to detour around it. So it took us some time to get in that area.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Who do we follow up on to ask about what happened after your timeline ends, after 3 or 3:30?
Runge will be your contact.
Absolutely. Lieutenant Runge.
Okay.
We'll definitely answer the questions.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now, this week, the City of La Mesa has made several important announcements. The La Mesa City Council on Tuesday night voted unanimously to fund an independent investigation of the actions of the city's police, firefighters, and other agencies to the protests and riots. Several arrests have been made of alleged looters, rioters, and a man found with explosive Molotov cocktails and fireworks during that tumultuous night. Charges have been dropped against Amaury Johnson, the young black man in the trolley stop incident, though an investigation into the officer's conduct continues. The city has also announced a settlement in a lawsuit filed by a Helix High School student shown in a viral video being pushed to the ground by a La Mesa police officer back in 2018. La Mesa police have announced it has banned the use of the controversial carotid chokehold, and the city is moving forward on its plans for a police oversight commission slated to meet next week.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Brianna Gomez with a Crime Beat report. Federal charges have been filed against a man accused of possessing explosive devices during riots in La Mesa that began the night of May 30th. The U.S. Attorney's Office has charged 28-year-old Zachary Karras of San Diego with possessing incendiary devices, including Molotov cocktails and fireworks. On the night of May 30th and early hours of May 31st, multiple buildings and vehicles were set afire during a night of terror in La Mesa, following peaceful protests against police violence earlier in the day. According to the complaint, Karras and his girlfriend, Callie Junkett, were sitting on the pavement at the corner of Allison Avenue and Spring Street by the trolley tracks. Officers ordered the crowd to disperse for an unlawful assembly and arrested Karras after he failed to leave. Officers then found that Karras possessed Molotov cocktails, two glass bottles with wicks that contained gasoline. Molotov cocktails are known as bottle bombs or poor man's grenades. Karras also had fireworks in his possession. A federal agent with the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, or ATF, inspected the Molotov cocktails and found them to be functioning incendiary devices. A timeline released by the La Mesa Police Department indicates Molotov cocktails were thrown at the La Mesa police station during the protest there earlier in the evening. That night, several vehicles were burned, including a Heartland Fire Battalion chief's vehicle and a Vons truck. Spot fires were ignited in City Hall and other buildings. Chase Bank, Union Bank, and the historic Randall Lamb building burned down. Karis's girlfriend posted a GoFundMe page for his legal defense, claiming he was there as a peaceful protester. On his Facebook page, Karis claimed that despite being caught with flammable devices, he was, quote, in no way part of the burning of any structures and was not involved in any looting. If convicted, Karis could face up to 10 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. U.S. Attorney Robert Brewer in San Diego states, quote, the Constitution strongly protects the First Amendment right of all to speak out and peacefully protest. My office is committed to protecting that First Amendment right. But, he adds, violence, however, by a relatively small number of opportunists who sought to wreak havoc, destroy property, and threaten the safety of peaceful protesters will not be tolerated.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
California's largest state park is about to get even bigger. The Anza Borrego Foundation, or ABF, announced that it has closed escrow on several properties it plans to donate to the state and expand Anza Borrego Desert State Park. The land transfer will include 331 parcels, totaling 17,598 acres over 25 years of land acquisitions. A newsletter sent by the ABF to its members states, in response to COVID-19, there has been increased land activity. Landowners have called eager to sell, and a couple even wanted to donate their land to ABF. Grant writing and land acquisition have continued, even while the park has been closed off to the public due to the pandemic. One of the newly acquired is a 10-acre parcel of donated land overlooking Texas Dip and San Felipe Wash, surrounded on all four sides by ABF and State Park property. In addition, on April 1st, ABF closed escrow on two inholdings, that is, land surrounded by the state park, with grants from the Resources Fund. The transfer to the California State Park Service is expected to be finalized soon. The ABF statement concludes, even in the face of COVID-19, we are hopeful for the close of sale in the next few months to be able to leverage land transfer funds for future acquisitions. You can learn more, donate funds or land to the Anza Borrego Foundation at theabf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
The latest easing of COVID-19 restrictions are rolling out. Starting June 12th, indoor movie theaters can reopen and film production of TVs and movies can resume. Also allowed to reopen with limitations are gyms, bars, and wineries, swimming pools, hotels and other rental properties for travelers, and major tourist attractions such as zoos, aquariums, galleries, and museums. In addition, racetracks and card rooms can reopen, and professional sporting events can be held, but without spectators for now. Masks and social distancing will be required when not eating or drinking at these facilities. Steps for business owners to follow and guidance are available at the county's Safe Reopening page. Despite these steps to return life closer to normal, however, County Health Officer Wilma Wooten warns several communities across the nation have seen a spike in case numbers after reopening their economies. We need to remain vigilant and continue to use the measures that have slowed the spread of COVID-19, she says. Now, a few businesses are required to remain closed due to the pandemic, including convention centers, concert venues, nail salons, therapeutic massage businesses, and tattoo parlors. About 3% of people tested countywide are testing positive for the virus, and that's been consistent over the last several weeks. As of Thursday, 110 new cases and 5 more deaths were reported. Currently, there are 56 active outbreaks, although all but 12 of those are in skilled nursing homes or other congregate living facilities. La Mesa, where thousands of protesters and rioters had raised concerns over a possible spike in coronavirus cases, the city has had only a small rise since those events, with 23 new cases since May 30th. You can learn more at the county's COVID-19 page by visiting coronavirus-sd.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Jonathan Getz with a People Power Report. The Ramona Community Foundation, or RCF, has announced its annual call for grant applications. In its ninth year of grant making, RCF invites nonprofit organizations and agencies to submit proposals that demonstrate the power to build a more vibrant Ramona community. The goal of the grant cycle is to support programs that make Ramona a great place to live, work, and play, they say. Desirable projects will inspire community pride and revitalization and increase the quality of life of the broader community. To achieve the greatest impact, RCF will fund programs that involve collaborative efforts, bringing together a variety of stakeholders. Eligible nonprofit organizations serving Ramona may submit proposals of $1,500 to $5,000. Projects should be practical, achievable within a 12-month time frame, and have prospects for long-term sustainability. Grant guidelines are available at sdfoundation.org. The deadline for application submission is Monday, July 13th at 5 p.m. For more information about the application, contact Carrie@sdfoundation.org, and that's Carrie spelled K-E-R-R-I. The Ramona Community Foundation was established by the San Diego Foundation as part of a regional network of affiliate foundations. According to their section on sdfoundation.org, RCF leverages local leadership, builds endowments, increases impactful philanthropy, and promotes civic engagement. The San Diego Foundation and its donors have granted more than $1.2 billion to support nonprofit organizations and strengthen our San Diego community over the past 45 years. Learn more about the Ramona Community Foundation and or the San Diego Foundation at sdfoundation.org.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.